Patriots Draft Countdown, presented by Bud Light.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
Hosted by the writers of Patriots.com. From now until you hear
the New England Patriots what?
The countdown is on. Welcome to the Patriots Draft Countdown, presented by Bud Light.
All right, here we go. It's the big finale of Patriots Draft Countdown. How's everybody doing? Mike Dussault here. Patriots Draft Countdown presented by Bud Light. Been on vacation for the last couple of days, so it might be
Guess
some marble mouth.
Kelly
back.
Easy to drink, easy to enjoy. Bud Light, the official beer sponsor of the New England Patriots. And guys, we've been through the last few months, and I think, you know, unfortunately, it's been one of those weird years where Patriots are picking over third overall. I mean, I don't feel like a lot has really changed over the last couple of months. We've done a bunch of shows. We've done film breakdowns. We've talked to, the national pundits. Everybody's weighed in. We did all the positional previews. I feel like we've covered this draft, every angle of it, but it seems like the consensus right now, Paul, is that Drake May is there. The Patriots should take Drake May. I think the thinking people or the fans, that anybody who pays attention to this stuff now, seems like everybody's on the Drake May train. Is that an apt way to put it?
So I would agree with you. I do think there is a loud, maybe not huge, portion of the fans that would like to trade down. But I don't know if you've ever heard this one before. If they don't love one of the quarterbacks, Mike, at three, I think this is an opportunity to move down a little bit and maybe pick up extra picks. Have you guys heard anybody bring that up?
Is that a scenario that could happen?
That's a possibility, is
possibly.
It not?
Possibly.
Is that how it works?
No. I do think there are some people that think trading down. And why I say there are some people, every week I put a notebook up. Every week I'm sort of writing about all the different quarterbacks. And I'm getting a lot of people not always happy with the options.
Yeah.
A couple of weeks ago, I was sort of downplaying the J.J. McCarthy rumors, and I was getting killed for having J.J. McCarthy even on my mind. More recently, it was Drake May, and a lot of people are like, oh, you finally have the right guy in the pitcher this week. And then other people are like, no, the mechanics are a mess. You got to trade down. So I don't think it's a consensus. I think it's a consensus probably among us.
Yeah.
That's how I feel.
Well, Evan, I'm going to tee you up.
Yes, sir.
You did some film reviews, and look, if the thing that everybody thinks is going to happen happens, and tomorrow night the Patriots select Drake May, what does it mean? What does it mean for the Patriots if they bring Drake May in and he joins this team as the first-round pick tomorrow night?
Well, if you ask me, I think the first thing that I'll say tomorrow night, if that is the pick, is everybody's got to be patient. You got to be patient. He's not going to come in here and be Andrew Luck and turn them into a playoff team overnight. I don't think that. But the end goal or the eventual developmental track for him is Josh Allen, Justin Herbert level franchise quarterback. And that to me is worth third overall pick in the draft. You know, that's what everybody's looking for. That's what all these teams that need a quarterback are searching for. So do I think that he's going to get there overnight? No. Does he need mechanical things that are going need to go better for him, footwork, that type of stuff? Absolutely. But I think that if you give him the time and you give him the right development, and I guess we can talk about if you trust their coaches or not to do that, but I do think they have two guys in Alex Van Pelt and Ben McAdoo, especially AVP. He was a quarterback in the league. He's been coaching quarterbacks for 100 years. He's one of those guys that understands the nuances, the footwork, the training that needs to go into it, all that kind of stuff. So I do trust him a little bit to develop Drake May because of his background with quarterbacks specifically. So that's a long-winded answer, but I think the biggest thing that you have to realize is that it might not happen overnight. He might not start week one. It might not be immediate. But by the time we're talking about year two and three with Drake May, I think we're going to be talking about a guy that the Patriots can really build around and move forward with.
Let's move on to Chris Cassidy. Chris, you were on the show throughout the year, you're wrapping up. But for you, just from your perspective, how would you feel? Drake May, I mean, where you sit right now?
Out of the three quarterbacks, the three top quarterbacks, I think where the Patriots stand with Drake May, that is your guy. I think that's your person you go to, the person you can select at three. I think he'd be a great addition, help kind of build a team around him, build a culture around him. Again, Evan's telling the truth when he says might be a guy who comes in, doesn't jump in right away, but kind of gets his bearings, kind of watches Jacoby a little bit, watches Bailey, whoever it could be, but, trying to find some sort of comfort level before jumping right into the fold, I think it's going to be important for him.
pump some brakes a little bit on that. Now, so Tease, you know, we've got to get everybody introduced. Tease Bauman did a great job sitting in for me in the host chair there last week. Appreciate that. And, of course, you guys can call in 818. What is 818? Oh, man, I'm still in California time.
That's okay? Shaking off the rust.
He made one trip to the West Coast and, like, completely lost his
mind.
You were there 4 days.
What number was it? 855.
You were there 4 days.
We're here for an hour live to close off this, you know, Patriots Draft Countdown, which I think has been a lot of fun, and everybody's got a chance to, you know, contribute. But, guys, I'm gonna open this up. Tease, you can start. But, I mean, just if it isn't Drake May at third overall, who do you think the pick is?
I think it's Jaden Daniels. I think it's just a flip-flop between the two. I hope it's a flip-flop, like, whichever one's taken. I think we just take the other. That's what happens when you win the game on Christmas Eve. But, yeah, either or. I think Jaden Daniels might be a little more pro-ready, per se. He might beat out Jacoby. Hopefully he does at the number three pick. But, you know, Drake May, you got to sit him down a bit longer. But one of the two, don't care who it is, pick one of those two.
It just seems so simple. And that's, like, you know, what – I mean, that's the easy answer, right? I mean, is there – what aren't we thinking about, Paul? Like, I mean, what – are we just assuming it's going to go to plan tomorrow night? Or are we going to get there and be like, this came out of nowhere?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's probably Tease's answer. But if you want to play devil's advocate, it would be – Elliot Wolf and the vast array of decision makers that the Patriots are going to rely on maybe are not in concert with who the best guy is. And if there are J.J. McCarthy or Michael Penix backers in that room, then who's to say the move would be, we can move down, we can add picks and get the guy we like just as much as Drake May or Jaden Daniels. With Penix or McCarthy. It's not a move that I would necessarily be in favor of, but it's also not one that I hate. You know, you guys know me. I'm not generally wishy-washy. I have pretty strong opinions. Sometimes I'm right, sometimes I'm wrong. Mostly I'm wrong. But this is one I'm kind of in the gray area. I can understand people that say they have a lot of needs. I don't think there's a huge – to me, the key here, if you want the extra picks, is – I don't think there's a big difference between McCarthy and Penix in May and Daniels. If you feel like that, the trade down is not a bad option.
Yeah, I think we got to touch on McCarthy a little bit. And, I mean, I guess the question I was asking myself a little bit when I was on vacation is, you know, is it just the fact of that all these rumors have come that McCarthy is going to go in the top five? And that just doesn't seem like it fits to me. And I think there's a lot to like about J.J. McCarthy. I mean, I think maybe in another year – where you were a team that didn't need a quarterback to come in right away and be the franchise guy and take the mantle. You know, you have a guy maybe that you like right now, but you see down the road it's going to – you know, I don't hate J.J. McCarthy as a day two developmental guy. And I know that he's not that, right? But are you guys totally out on him no matter what, or is it just where he's supposed to go? Chris, you seem like you're jumping.
Yeah, no, I love this conversation. I really feel, you know, J.J. could fall – I mean, not that he will fall into the second day, but, like, this whole – time at the beginning of the draft conversation was just talking about JJ and where he kind of fall day two, second round, third round type guy, more second round, but you know, the more you hear about it, everything kind of hyping him up, has a great pro day, kind of now he's in the top five pick range barring trade conversations. But it's kind of amazing to me to like how fast it all happened.
And seems like every year this seems like something
right,
like this
yeah,
happens
right, right? Yeah. Someone creeps
I,
up.
I would The biggest reason why I've been so anti-J.J. McCarthy is that I'm always wary of the late riser. The guy that hasn't played an actual down of padded football in 6 months that all of a sudden now is a top five pick. And the last time that I remember this sort of rise for a quarterback was Zach Wilson. And I'm not saying that he's necessarily going to bust out as hard as Zach Wilson did, but those types of guys that interview well, that have great pro days, that look good in the suit, that like do all those types of things and don't actually do anything on film or on a football field to change your mind, but it's all about these meetings and these closed door conversations that we're not privy to. Those guys win front offices over, and more times than not, they get them fired. And it's the guys like Jaden Daniels, it's Drake May, those guys that have been, these two guys are really good for the whole thing. You know, going back to the fall, you know, Jaden Daniels wins the Heisman Trophy. There was no question whether or not Jaden Daniels was going to be in this conversation. Drake May was in this conversation since the start of 2022.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then you have this guy come out of nowhere, and all of a sudden we're talking about J.J. McCarthy in the same tier, and I'm always wary of that guy.
Yeah. And I would just say, to back up Evan's point, Jaden Daniels rose during the course of the football season with a great season on the field. He ended the season as a potential top five pick. J.J. McCarthy rose kind of once the season ended.
Can I ask you a question,
Paul? Like Zach Wilson and Mac Jones.
Specifically you, like, does it mean anything that the kids lost like three games since high school? Does that mean anything? Like, when you're looking at a quarterback,
I think it means something. I think the guy, you know, that's what you're banking on, is that this guy has that quality, you know, that people can't, it's kind of an intangible, you know, he's a good leader. People follow him. I don't think it's always a coincidence when a player is always on winning teams, you know? Now that said, he's a highly regarded NFL prospect. I'm going to guess his high school team was pretty good because of him.
Well, he also went to IMG.
No, I understand that, but he also won before he went. He won a state championship before he went to IMG. But, like, when you're that talented, you lift a team, you know, by yourself. It's like, you know, Drake May played for Josh McCown, right? No, is that the right guy?
Yep.
It was Drake May, right?
Yep.
How do you think that high school team was? It was probably pretty good.
Yeah.
You know? I just feel like, yes, I do think it means something, but I don't get wrapped up in he was 27-1 at Michigan, so that's the guy you have to pick.
That's another thing that I'm always super wary of, because we have so much evidence that it doesn't matter. Most of the time, the only guy that you can say won in college, won in the pros recently is Joe Burrow. And I just think Joe Burrow's really good. I don't think you can really put those two on the same tier. Like, I don't think that they're talent-wise that J.J. McCarthy is in the same conversation as a Joe Burrow. So you look at guys, you know, that have had that winning intangible, you know, like a Baker Mayfield. Everybody talked about Baker like that he was this leader that people gravitate. How did that work out for Cleveland? You know,
he went into Ohio State and put the flag in.
Yeah.
I kind of compare it too to Trevor Lawrence. Not that they had not that they had similar college careers, but like how Trevor Lawrence came in. I mean, he was always a winner, didn't lose a lot.
Yeah.
And that was emphasized in his draft stock as well.
Very similar numbers. Absolutely.
Right. And I think, I mean, Trevor Lawrence, he's been okay in Jacksonville. He hasn't been eye popping though, you know? And I mean, that winning mentality.
I actually think there's a chance that sometimes, depending on how those guys unfold, that it can be a detriment, because I don't care how good you are, you're going to lose games in the NFL. Mm. Can you handle it?
Yeah.
Now, I think Trevor Lawrence has handled it really well. You know, I wouldn't say that's derailed his career, but you don't know. Sometimes, you know, the football adversity and how guys handle it, J.J. McCarthy hasn't had a lot.
Yeah.
Sometimes it can go the other way.
Go ahead.
That's the big thing too. You haven't really seen J.J. McCarthy like be down 15 points and lead the team back. I mean, he's on a completely stacked Michigan team, weapons all around. I think there's a chance that he's like for draft night Will Levis 2.0, and he's sitting around for a while, and it was a big smokescreen season.
I mean,
I don't think there's much of a chance of that.
Not a huge drop.
I don't think
he
can possibly get past 11.
Really?
I think that there's a chance that, like what Paul just said, that it's like a Mac Jones type of situation where
they fall to the
teens, you know, 11, you know, 12, 13, that range, and he goes there instead of going three, which is what happened to Mac.
Someone could
trade
up to four with Arizona and take him. It could go 1, 2, 3, four, or someone can trade, you know, somewhere between 5 and 10. You know, Atlanta, I think, is in there. They're probably open for business. If there's no trades, I can't imagine Minnesota doesn't take a quarterback.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just an interesting contrast, because we talk a lot about when they drafted Mac, and you know, we talked about the talent that was around Mac. And Tease, you just kind of mentioned the Michigan talent, which, I mean, I think very good, but would you guys put it in the same boat as LSU or Alabama in those years when they had
not
really high round guys?
Different kind of talent, but yes. And I agree, Evan just started to say it. Like, you don't have the dynamic nature of Justin Jefferson and Jamar Chase on the outside, but they're going to be up there among the most drafted players in recent memory, right?
Yeah,
Alabama and the rest of those.
They just build the team a little bit more old school. You know, they have great defense, great line play, great running backs. You know, like that. Their team is just not built with the five-star receiver recruits and things like that. Roman Wilson's a really good player. Like that, he's going to be
a day two pick, but he's not.
That no, and you know, that's I think one thing that the Mac PTSD has definitely I've been wary of this process is Jaden Daniels, Malik Nabers, Brian Thomas Jr., loaded cast, Michael Penix. I think Michael Penix has six guys that are going to be drafted on offense around him. And what, five in the top 100? And he's the sixth in the top 100. And Dylan Johnson, his running back, is going to get drafted too. So you have two tackles that are going to get drafted, one in the first round, one on day two. You have three receivers that are going to get drafted, one in the top 10. And then you have a running back that's probably going to be like a mid to late day three pick. All going from what? Like, you could literally draft the Washington offense and have a pretty good NFL offense just with the talent that went to that school. And he would just happen to be the trigger man in the middle of all of it.
You guys remember Zach Mettenberger from LSU?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
There you go.
That's how I fell for Zach Mettenberger.
Paul, what year was that?
It's probably like 10 years ago.
20.
Oof. 10.
10, 11, but it was that's like, what I was going to say, yeah.
I think it was like at LSU. It was like the Jarvis Landry maybe era with OBJ.
Oh, right. Yeah, those
and,
two.
And Jeremy Hill.
Oh, had a cup of coffee here, right?
Yeah, really good. He tore his ACL early in the season. Yeah,
won the Super Bowl that year.
Remember that?
Really good running back. That team was loaded, and I was like, this quarterback, he's pretty good.
Turned out
he wasn't.
Evan, you mentioned Michael Penix, and I just, you know, we've talked about kind of the high round guys, and we feel like it could be May and McCarthy lurking, but, you know, Penix, Nix, we talked a lot about these guys. Just generally, though, how do you feel about a draft strategy for the Patriots where they wait till day two for a quarterback? Like, do you think that makes sense right now for where they are, what they need? Is that going to move the needle if they draft a Bo Nix, a Michael Penix, you know, early day two? I mean, assuming I've seen plenty saying Penix ain't getting out of the first round, but just getting past
I would put Nix in that category too. Like, I think there's a chance that Nix goes in the first round also, like late, you know, maybe in the 20s. But if you're one of these teams that doesn't get the quarterback the first time around, are you really waiting all the way to your pick in the second round for him to still be there? I don't know. So really you're talking about Spencer Rattler, you know, as really the only guy that I would put as like a day two grade.
Even worth it? Is it even worth it for the Patriots?
I don't think so. I mean, Spencer Rattler is we were talking about this on PU yesterday, I think. Spencer Rattler is great for a team that has an aging veteran quarterback that's going to hold the starting job like the Jets, that just want to get the developmental guy in the building and put him behind Aaron Rodgers, and maybe he's Jordan Love. You know, like maybe it turns out that it works out in a couple of years that he's a good quarterback for them after Rodgers retires. For the team like the Patriots, I don't see any of these guys making much sense. And then you really start to get into day three, which is, you know, Michael Pratt and Joe Milton and all those guys. And now we're really talking about backups.
Like, what's the point? You got Bailey Zappe, right? Like, do you need to draft one of those guys to like...
No, that's why I'm not a huge... fan of, I'm like, the whole double dip, because everybody points to Washington. Yeah, their bonus baby got hurt, and they needed the fourth rounder to come in, right?
Yeah.
Like, and, you know, hats off to them. They picked a guy in the fourth round who turned out to be a really good player for a fourth round pick in Kirk Cousins. I just don't think that that's overly realistic to just, okay, so like you said, it's Bailey Zappe. More often than not, that's your fourth round pick quarterback. A guy who can play, but he's not ever going to be your starter. And I'm not saying that you wouldn't draft. I would draft a quarterback every year.
Yeah.
I'm not necessarily in favor of drafting two in a year.
Yeah, I think a guy like Rattler, the comparison I've been using is Gardner Minshew. You know, similar, you know, ballsy, good arm talent, can move around a little bit. But is he ever, to Paul's point, is he ever going to be your quarterback? Is that ever going to be the guy that we're, oh, we got Gardner Minshew? Like, no, that's not going to be how it
and
is.
Like, it's like when you take, you know, like fans, I think, have this notion, we do it every year, and it's going to happen again when we do our draft shows on, let's say, like Friday and Saturday. Well, we needed a quarterback, a tackle, and a wide receiver, and we got them with the first three picks. We filled all our needs. No, you didn't. You picked guys that played the positions that you feel like are needs. Mm-hmm. We'll find out if you filled any of the needs.
Yeah.
When the guys get to play, like, you know, penciling in a tackle in the fifth round doesn't fill your left tackle need. Now it might. It might be Michael Wenu. You know it. Or, you know, it might be Clint Oldenburg.
That's one of the biggest things I've taken away.
Say Justin Herron.
From being in this job. Like, I don't know. Well. I mean, and it's smart, and it's probably mostly taken from you. Was like, I think as a, you know, more of a fan, you look at those day three picks and you're like, oh boy. You know, it's easy to get excited, where I think I've gotten a little bit more measured in my response to the, all right, well, we'll see. These guys are, everybody's a lottery ticket, but those guys especially.
In fairness, I will say there are a lot of good offensive linemen that get taken in day three. Like, I think that's a spot where, and it was more so when Dante was here, because they had the old program that Bill had in Cleveland. He called it the offensive lineman development program with Pat Hill. Remember Pat Hill, the old Fresno State coach who was on those Brown staffs? That was basically what he was tasked with. You know, we're going to give you a bunch of young, raw linemen, and you're going to make them NFL players. And they had success doing that. Dante was fantastic at it. And that's why you had guys like Brandon Gorin and Tom Ashworth. And, you know, it wasn't always Matt Light and Nate Solder and Nick Kazier that were, you know, first three-round picks. They had a lot of undrafted free agents that just sort of – bided their time,
Dan
and eventually
Connelly.
They needed to, you know, when they needed to play, they
Captain
were ready.
Dave.
Yeah.
Because they were very well schooled.
Yeah, I mean, they had a line at one point that was Marcus Cannon, right? Sixth round pick.
I would just say he had the cancer issue. On him, because he would have been a
Shaq Mason.
Shaq Mason, mid round pick.
Mid round pick that wasn't invited to the combine. David Andrews, UDFA.
Undrafted.
Joe Tooney, third round pick. And they had a fantastic line, you know, like out of those guys.
Yeah.
And Nate Solder was the left tackle, and he was the first round pick, and he might have been the worst out of the group.
That group.
I think to your point too, Paul, like throughout the years when they had a pinch, they always seemed to have a guy able to step in. Russ Hochstein, you know, they always seemed to have a guy,
you know, Ryan Wendell,
ready to step in.
You know, there's the long list of guys, you know, I go back 100 years, you know, when Chris wasn't even around yet.
very true.
You know, Greg Robinson Randall, you know, there's
totally know who that is.
There's names that you go way back and, you know, they plugged him in and they were fine. You know, I'm not telling you they were as good as Shaq Mason and Joe Tooney. You know, Stephen Neal, the ultimate example of this.
The guy who didn't even
play football.
I'm gonna steal another Paul take and just play the other side for just a second.
Okay.
And I think the biggest thing that I look at with this draft and what the Patriots should do at the top, Paul, you've always said this about Brady. He made the line better.
Yeah.
He made the line better. And I know we talk about it with Brady because of the quick release and the pocket awareness and the things that he would do in the pocket with his mobility. But it doesn't always need to be just that. Like, you can make the line better by being Jaden Daniels and getting the heck out of Dodge when there's pressure around. You can be better for your offensive line like Drake May does, which is the subtle movements in the pocket where he knows the pressure is coming from this direction and he'll just kind of subtly move to his right, and he has the arm talent to then flick it back to his left and still get it there. You know, those are the little things that you see these quarterbacks do where all of a sudden Cole Strange looks a little bit better, Sidy Sow looks a little bit better, and you're like, oh, the tackle situation, we can work with this. This isn't as bad as we thought it was.
Yeah.
And that's why the quarterback can change everything.
Yeah.
And the flip side of that is, maybe you do need to pick better, you know, more talented, quote-unquote, offensive linemen because you don't have that luxury of having a guy who you know is going to make those guys better.
Yeah. Well, Paul, you mentioned quarterback, tackle, wide receiver, and I think that's kind of been the common refrain here as we get down. Like, you know, what order? I mean, for me, and I think a lot of others, it's get the quarterback, get that tackle, and then there's, you know, wide receivers that you can kind of supplement. But my question for the panel, though, is what's the first position taken outside of that through those three position groups? And maybe it comes earlier, but just what position group could you see being drafted? Maybe even, you know, in the first or second round. I don't want to get crazy, but what's the first position group outside of that group that you think gets taken? Tease.
I think it's edge. I think there's just a lot of great players there, like kind of, as we said, round three, round four guys. And I think that might be a moment where take the best player that's on the board.
Mm.
And I've seen a lot of the mocks, you know, you got some of the Penn State guys there. I don't know. It just seems like, hey, are we going to do a dart throw or get, hey, this guy's a really good prospect that slipped, and you can never have too many edge guys. So I'm going with the edge position.
Yeah,
You a big Chop Robinson fan?
I was just about to say, to agree with Tease there, I think the edge position is so depth in this draft, and I'm a big Chop Robinson guy, as Evan mentioned.
Have to take him at 34 if he's still there.
I know. I really like Chop, though. I think he has a lot to show. And if you don't go in one of those three,
you got a spot.
There he is.
I agree. I think edge rusher Matthew Judon, last year of his contract, we don't know if he's going to be around. Josh Uche signed a 1-year deal, so you don't know what he's going to. You know, you start to look at early on in the draft. I think they need to hit the immediate holes that we've been discussing for 6 months. But you start to talk about early day three, we're getting into, okay, what are the holes on the 2025 roster? And you'd have to think about, you know, the 2-year depth chart. of what this looks like. And if Judon's not there, if Uche is not there, you know, those are spots that maybe you need to fill. You know, a couple names, you know, Gabriel Murphy from UCLA is a guy that I've really liked in this process. He's, you know, the other guy to Leyte Lotu on the other side. He's one of those guys that can move around a little bit, though. He can rush over the guard or center in line. He can rush from the outside, and he has experience doing that. So that's a really, you know, a Patriot type of thing at that spot. You also look at, you know, the kid from Kansas, Austin Booker, who I think is going to be a really good pro, but is super young and raw. You know, you give him, you put him in that room. You give Joe Kim and DeMarcus Covington a year with him. He learns under Matthew Judon. Maybe next year, you know, Austin Booker is now all of a sudden a breakout player for you. You know, those are the types of guys that I would look at. You know, two total polar opposites, because Murphy's a little bit older and Booker is one of the youngest players in the draft, if not the youngest player in the draft. So I would look more of Booker, who they had in for a visit, for that exact reason. Let him develop behind the scenes. He doesn't have to play this year at that spot, so you allow him to develop a little bit.
Yeah, I agree with these guys on edge. I'm going to go with defensive back. I mean, I don't know if it's a corner or a safety. I think it's going to be interesting to see how – there's a couple of things defensively that I'm sort of curious about. But special teams-wise, if the changes to the kickoff rules are going to change the sort of makeup of – some of those players, like you're going to need bigger players, because it's the kick return has kind of become more of a running play.
Yep.
That's what Bill was saying,
you know.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm sort of jumping off on. He didn't really take it that far, like, you know, you're going to need more linebackers. But I feel like Jonathan Jones, you know, he's just sort of kind of getting to that area where you're wondering, you know, when's the drop off going to come.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about the sort of the lack of a true center fielder.
Yep.
They have a bunch of good players at safety that are all kind of similar. So I think they need some depth in the secondary.
It's a good pull, Paul, yeah. Because there's a lot of really good players in this draft for those two spots, and that's not always common. You know, it's a really a deep slot corner draft in particular. You know, it starts with your boy
Miles Bryant.
It starts with your boy Sandstrill, right? Like, he's probably the top of the board. But
it's my boy
Everett
Max. Well, that too. Max Melton from Rutgers. You know, another one of those guys that's probably going to be a nickel in the league.
Yep.
You know, that's the top of the board, but it goes pretty deep in rounds. I would say 2 through 4, specifically guys that the NFL projects to play inside slot. Then you have center fielders too. You know, Kalen Bulk is my guy from USC. You know, you have different guys that can play up top. Cam Kitchens from Miami. I've been looking for the Daron Harmon for the Patriots.
Center fielder.
Literally since Daron Harmon left. And every year we get in the draft, and it's 17 box safeties. You know, it's 17 Kyle Duggars. It's guys that are playing a ton of split safety zone, because that's what they play in college. They play quarters because they don't want to give up the big plays. This draft is one of the unique drafts where there's true post middle of the field safeties. And I just have to wonder, to complete it, to put it all together, do they take one of those guys in the third or fourth round? And now all of a sudden the secondary really fits the pieces, the puzzle pieces really fit together back there.
Yeah, I think it's we always talk about that. One other position, though, I just want to mention, and I love what you guys said about edge. I totally agree with that. But I want to talk about running back too, because I think running back's a position that
this team's got a lot of holes.
You got a need, but yeah. It's, you know, everyone, you talk about how good, well, it would line up if you're able to get quarterback, tackle, and, you know, those kind of positions line up with where their picks are. And they might have to trade back up into the first if they really wanted one of those tackles. But it just feels like these like round 3, 4, 5 running backs, you don't have to overextend yourself. They're not going to be an every down kind of workhorse, but you could get a guy, you know, in the fourth round that could step in. And I mean, is this kind of a need that we're not talking enough about, maybe running back?
I think so. Yeah.
I think it's Stevenson in his last year.
I think it's a need, but I mean, we've talked about before, running back is just such a position where, like, that could be a UDFA guy. That, I mean, sixth round, I don't know. I just feel like there are other holes on this team. If you're talking fifth round and, you know, you pass up on the lineman, I think that's where you take the lineman. I don't think, like, running back's not.
But, I mean, would you take a second tackle over a running back? You know, like, is it that bad?
It could be. I just think, like, linemen in general just get injured so much.
See,
I just think.
This is where I kind of feel, and I understand what everybody's saying. I don't necessarily disagree with any of the thoughts that you guys are all having about all the different positions. And Evan succinctly put it, like they can't really go wrong. They have a need at almost every spot. But I think that you have to try to stay away from, we need to fill all these needs right away. Like, we need stars at every spot. Like, mm-hmm. at some point, and I don't know where that is, I'm even going in the second round, and I've kind of made a change because philosophically I was sort of thinking quarterback, tackle, wide receiver. And I've kind of changed. And Evan started this a little bit, got me thinking about it, and one of the rare times he's changed my view on something.
Wow.
Okay, so hats off to you, Evan.
I'm not even insulted. I'm proud.
I actually answered, and we did some of the questions, and we all answered some of the things, and I went quarterback, wide receiver, because I'm not sure the value at tackle is as high as wide receiver once you get to, like, let's say 35.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and if they – I understand they need a tackle, and I'm not dismissing. This is not one of my do your offensive line in your own time sort of dismissals. I'm not doing that. I understand how important it is that they find a tackle, but you can't force it. And I think that you get in trouble when you say, well, I have a tackle on my board at 34, but I haven't rated as the 85th best player in the draft. And I have about 8 wide receivers between 34 and 85. I got to take one of those wide receivers. The same is true, you know, to Tease's point about running back. If the running back is a good player and you feel like the value is there, take him. Because I agree with Evan. I think you need a running back. I don't have to have a tackle because, well, I need a tackle. You have to try to stay somewhat close to your board.
Yeah, I think we probably maybe – I mean, it seems like at least internally based on what Elliot Wolf said last week that, like, they might believe in their tackles a little bit more than we all do.
Do you think that was true?
I don't know. I mean, I don't love the thought of Chucks. Well, I'm still working on it.
Chooks. It's actually Chooks.
I got confirmation. I asked him.
It's Chooks.
I asked him. It's Chooks.
You keep changing it on me. I can't. Chooks.
That's my fault. It's Chooks.
Chooks.
I'll take the responsibility.
Or a Fark or 4-4.
No, just say Chooks.
Think about this, though. What we're going to, is this draft 4? Is this draft 4 or 5? For us, like, we've had CeeDee Lamb. We've had Olave, all these receivers. We've just missed on, like, we keep whiffing and missing on receivers, and now we're at 34. We could potentially go back up and get one in the first round. Like, let's make the sexy pick.
Yeah, and I mean, to that point, like, you know, Evan's saying if it was Drake May, probably have to sift for a little bit. But you go and get a wide receiver there. Like, you want him in one.
Yeah. If you have a, you know, and I'm just throwing names out. I'm not exactly sure where these guys are all. Like, if you had, like, Troy Franklin or the kid from Houston, Paul. Like, who do you have ranked higher?
Yeah.
Patrick Paul?
Yeah, Patrick Paul.
Right? Look at me, tackle.
Look at you. Yeah.
If you had those two guys and they're ranked similarly, right? Yeah. By all means, if you feel like you need the tackle more, take them. But if you have one of those guys significantly ahead of the other, I think you just want, right now, I think the most important thing for Elliot Wolf and the rest of that brain trust is to find good football players, regardless of position.
It's a shallow tackle class. Yeah, it's not very deep at that position. It's very top-heavy. There's a bunch of really good tackles that are going to go in the top 50. But Patrick Paul is one of those guys that the tackle tax, he might go much higher.
I think he's going to get taken higher than probably should.
He's probably a third-round value in most drafts. But the drop-off from Patrick Paul to the next wave of tackles is so significant that I think that he's an early second round guy simply because of the way the board is going to fall. So, you know, I was listening to Jeremiah a little bit yesterday, Daniel Jeremiah from NFL Network, and he said that everybody's trading up for a tackle. Like, there's so many tackles that are going in that first round that everybody wants because then it's the cupboard's bare. Once the parade goes by, it's over. And so that's, I think, a something that to keep in mind with how they go about this order of operations. The tackle class might drop off so hard after 34 that they might have to take the tackle there.
Yeah, and the Patriots are one of many teams probably that we're going to try to trade back up. If that was, you know, it seems like a lot of teams would be interested.
Yeah, no, I was just going to go back to Paul's point about the wide receivers. Like, if you can get to that second, third round, and if you wanted to go quarterback, wide receiver, again, how important the offensive tackle position is for the Patriots, like, it's huge. But you also need those playmakers at wide receiver. You don't have, again, I'm going to say eye-popping again, but you don't have that eye-popping playmaker in the wide receiver core right now outside of DeMario Douglas, who is arguably sitting at your third slot wide receiver. And, I mean, you have the guys like Xavier Leggett and Ricky Pearsall that could fall the second, third round maybe. And, I mean, you have picks in rounds 2 and 3. I think those are two guys you could possibly, if they're on the board. I doubt that they're both there. I think they're both second round guys, but
somebody's got to fall, Chris. I mean, that's, and then you talk about the edge players. I mean, that's, you know, Chop Robinson. Like, I mean, that's, if there is a run on the tackles and everybody's trading up to get tackles, some position is going to get pushed down. But another thing I actually did, I printed this out, and
I'm happy that you printed that out.
Did you write that? I did. I thought it was an interesting. So Sanford, Kentucky wrote in, and actually, and we'll get to some emails here in the last half hour. But Sam, thanks for the email asking about the Schefter's tweet with the first round hit rate, which I have right here. No, I printed it big enough that you can maybe
not much of a difference between tackle and quarterback in terms of hits.
Yeah, that's so
who would have thunk it?
If only there was a center available in the top 10. I mean, you can't miss 92%. But you know, we talked about this a lot, Paul, on PU and stuff, and I just thought it was interesting. And I've seen other numbers. I guess it always depends on what the criteria.
Depends on
is,
who the
right?
evaluator is, like, and when? I will submit. Their criteria was simply earned a second contract with original team, which I think is
stinks.
Definitely flawed.
Yeah.
Definitely flawed.
Not a great way to do it.
It's I totally agree.
Okay.
However, I think it's not a great way to do it for all of the positions.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Like, especially wide receiver.
Like, I don't think a tackle is less likely to get a second contract if he stinks than a quarterback is.
Yeah.
You know? Like, so
but somebody,
it's a flawed. I think it's flawed, but it's flawed the same for all positions.
Yeah.
I just think that wide receiver is at the bottom of that list, I think.
Yeah, 27%.
And a couple of the recent, you got guys that get traded. You know, you got guys that don't.
Right. AJ Brown doesn't count as a hit.
This is the major flaw with this system.
You got
AJ Brown didn't get a second contract with his team.
You get guys that have the fifth year option. So, like, they're buying time with that. Like, so, like, I don't know. I
basically, you can't get more of a hit on a first round pick, I mean on a pick, than AJ Brown, and he didn't get a second contract with his team.
Yeah,
so he counts as a miss. Yes. That's the flaw in that system.
Yeah.
So it is center as top at 92%. Of course, that's
11 out of 12.
So not a high amount of numbers. I mean, the edges are 104 and they're 44%, but I don't know. I thought this was a good, kind of point of contention. But I mean, really, it's quarterback. It seems like it's 50-50, and it's probably more than that. I think the other numbers.
But you're looking at them all, and they're all roughly the same.
Yeah.
Is my point? Like, there's like low tackles are 64, quarterbacks are 56, right?
Yeah.
Like, what's the difference really?
Tackles 59.
59. I thought it was 54.
Yeah, 59.
Okay.
Yeah, a little bit more. But
a little bit higher attack.
The point does stand. I mean, the last thing I think I saw was that quarterbacks were like 60, which was better. But again, what was the criteria?
The other part of that, too, is like the quarterback is like harder because it's much more of an investment.
Right.
So, you got to be really sure to get that second contract. Whereas a tackle, let's say a tackle's okay. You can re-sign him.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not going to break the bank if he's just okay. I mean, it'll break the bank if he's a pro, an all-pro. You're going to pay for that.
And then look at the 2021 quarterback class where...
Like, did Nate Solder get a second contract with the Patriots? I think he did.
I thought he got a
small extension.
Yeah.
Before he went to the Giants.
Yeah. Yeah. They kind of strung him along a little bit.
Like, that counts as a hit.
Yeah. Well, it was a good topic, and I appreciate Sam writing in because I was thinking the same thing. Let's take a few emails here. Actually, you know what? We have a call. Let's take that. Sorry.
Deuce, get that.
Am I ready to use a mouse?
Get that mouse. Get that mouse ready. I don't know if they use them differently in California, but let's
see. Deuce, you need to.
My guess is that mouse is not connected to that. Oh, okay. There we go.
We really need to get Deuce some sleep. I think the jet lag is.
All right, we got Tyler from Florida. Hey, Tyler.
Did you actually walk back?
He might have.
Hey.
Thanks for calling, Tyler. What's going on?
So, my idea was the Chargers might want to trade up to get Marvin Harrison Jr. because the Cardinals are definitely taking him, if not. So, if we could get their first and second rounder, we could take like Amarius Mims in the second and Ladd McConkley, and then take Drake May in the first.
Yeah. Trade scenario for trading up. What do you think of that, Evan?
I would be very, very worried that some team would trade into four with Arizona and take Drake May.
Absolutely.
So I would not do that for that reason.
That opens the door for the more value to that. Absolutely. And so the Chargers are trading from 5 to 3, and they're giving you a first and a second?
Well, I guess he's saying a pick swap, right? and then the
Oh, okay. Yeah, probably right.
There's always so much confusion in that.
Yeah, but I
if it's just a pick swap and you're getting a second, yeah, that's plausible.
If Drake May is your guy, you have to take Drake May at three.
It's also if like teams are selling the farm for this player, shouldn't you want that player?
Can I ask another question? And this is totally up to you guys. You guys are the draft experts, and you guys have been in the
pundits.
You guys are in the dark room. Is Marvin Harrison worth trading up for?
I would say no in my book.
If you're the Chargers and you want Marvin Harrison, but Arizona takes him, can't you just take Malik Nabers?
Yeah. I wouldn't say it's worth trading up for in this draft because of how much talent there is at that position in this draft. But he is, I mean, he's the number one receiver in the class. Yeah, there's no question about that.
Well, I think Daniel Jeremiah disagrees, but
I think that's crazy.
I'm not even arguing that, that he's not the number one. I think he is the number one guy. I'm just saying, like, if you're the Chargers, then do I have to give up resources to go up and get
a wide receiver?
No, I agree with that.
Some people don't even think is the number one wide receiver.
I think that not having Marv as wide receiver one in this class is classic prospect fatigue. Like, absolutely classic prospect fatigue. There's no way that you can. Malik Nabers is a great talent. Adunze is a great talent. Those guys are not Marvin Harrison. Like, Marvin Harrison to me is in the same tiers as like when Jamar Chase came into the draft, or you know, going back a ways, I think the big comparison for a lot of people is AJ Green, like Julio Jones, like those types of talents. Like that's Marvin Harrison. I think Nabers is in maybe a little bit a notch below that. But I agree with you that I wouldn't give up the bag to trade up for getting Marvin Harrison.
And
when you could
I
just
mean,
get
it wouldn't
Malik
cost
Nabers.
Them that much to move up two spots. But I'm just like, I don't know why you would pay anything to move up. Not because I'm anti-Harrison, but I think a lot of Nabers.
Yeah, me too.
And I just think, okay, I'd rather have Harrison, but I'll take Nabers.
Yeah.
Or a Toonsman.
And my second round pick.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm with you on that.
Evan, you love comps. We got email from Ford in Savannah, Georgia. One comp for May I haven't really heard was Ben Roethlisberger. Both big, hard to bring down, and great arms. Maybe probably a little more shifty, possibly a better arm, but I always thought Big Ben was a little underrated, and we'd be happy to have a QB of that pedigree. Yeah, what do you guys think?
I've not to jump on the emailer, I've seen that comp a lot.
Yeah,
Big Ben is obviously like Big Ben's a Hall of Famer. So like, if Drake May ends up being as good as Big Ben, then the Patriots have done great. I think Big Ben was different. Now, my memory of Big Ben is probably more loafy, out of shape.
Yeah,
Big Ben.
You think in the end.
Yeah.
The walking
more
boot,
so than
he the ice
he could run when he came into the league.
Yeah, I remember, you know, him coming into the league and obviously playing the Patriots in the playoffs and stuff like that. But Paula and you, Deuce, would have a better memory of like rookie young Big Ben. But I think Drake May is a little bit more nimble.
More athletic.
Yeah, than Ben was.
I think more like Cam Newton than Ben Roethlisberger.
Yeah, I see a lot of Allen and Herbert, certainly. I see a lot of Jordan Love in him as well, if you want to, you know, go more of like the developmental comp.
That's a good one, Evan. That was the biggest thing that stood out to me in Green Bay when we were watching him was, and it's kind of a Drake May similar thing, where it's just inconsistency. It was like, you know, a couple plays, you'd be like, holy crap, Jordan Love is like just torching the Patriots right now. And then all of a sudden, it'd be like a duck. And you'd be like, what the hell is going on? You know, that kind of inconsistency.
That goes back to the be patient thing Evan said, though, because he first hit the field and people were like, this is, what are you doing?
I just have this fear of preseason game number one where, you know, little play action, little dump in the flat, and he throws it like over the guy's head because he's inaccurate at times.
Yeah.
Like he's a little loose, you know, with his mechanics and sometimes. And I think there's going to be some easy throws, quote unquote, that he misses and people are going to freak the out.
Yeah, Kurt Warner likes to call them boring throws.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the boring throws are often the ones that
he
misses.
Can't make.
You know, he's like one of those guys, like a, you know,
it's
basketball
like
player that can like hit a three with a guy in his face, but then when he has the wide open three, he bricks it.
Yeah, he's a 52% 3-point shooter who shoots 62% from the line.
Yeah. But you also look at him, and I actually have the opposite fear probably because I'm a Drake May guy.
I love Drake May.
I think we're going to get into training camp with Drake May and Jacoby Brissett and Bailey Zappi, and we're going to be like, you're not going to start the kid? Like you're gonna play these
Put
other
the kid in.
You're gonna play these other guys because Drake May is gonna get out there and yeah, he's gonna have some ducks and he's gonna have some misses, but he's also gonna throw a 50-yard bomb off his back foot and we're gonna be like, so we're going with the other guy here.
Thornton's gonna catch it.
And that's to my original
in all
point.
Fairness, this is a media corps who went gaga over Mac Jones doing this in
yeah,
practice.
So that's my other point my thing with the preseason is, well, what if he freaking is awesome? Like yeah. Then what do you do? And C.J. Stroud wasn't awesome. C.J. Stroud threw a pick right to Jalen Mills on his first drive.
Do you remember how he looked in that game?
Yeah,
not, no bueno.
If you had said to me that day that this guy is going to lead his team to the playoffs, they're going to go to the playoffs because of him.
And win a game.
I would have said you were insane based on that. That just shows you how little preseason football matters.
Yeah, but to my original point when I started the show, the Patriots, in my mind, need to stick to their guns. Like, if they are planning on him sitting and developing him the Mahomes way, just because he has a great preseason game and the fans are clamoring for it, you got to stick with the plan. Now, maybe the plan does expedite a little bit. Like, maybe he's in there by week 8 or 9 instead of year 2. But you can't just change everything just because he had a great preseason game or a great joint practice or something
like
that.
I agree. You have a plan. You have conviction. Just like the pick. You have conviction in the players that you're taking. You have a plan. You stick to it.
I have a question regarding the second round pick.
Okay.
Or just in general. Do you think there's a big trade? Is a trade on
well,
the option?
Well, hold that. Let's pause trade that for one second.
Up into the first round?
Or just for a vet?
Let me read this. Trade up into the first round.
Yeah.
Maybe, I think everybody would, yeah.
Maybe take away, two picks?
Because this is one thing, we're kind of summing everything up here. We're trying to in the last episode. But T brings up a great point. I was just about to tee it up with a question from Ron in Conway, New Hampshire. What's the possibility of us working out some type of draft day deal to get Ayuk or A.J. Brown? I think this is another, big piece of this draft that people have been kind of talking about a little bit. You just said it again, Tease. I mean, what do you guys think? Is there a chance the Patriots make one of those kind of splash moves? I mean, A.J. Brown seems like it's all based on his Instagram, like who he was following and stuff.
I would put the A.J. Brown at less than 1%.
Yeah, me too.
Like it's,
but Ayuk.
I'm not a big
clip
cap. I'm not a big cap space guy.
Yeah.
It's like a $48 million dead cap hit.
Yeah.
For the Eagles, it doesn't make any sense for them to trade him this year. Next year,
Stephon Diggs has
he's
a
gone.
Big dead cap hit too, and they still did it. So if there's a
$20 million difference,
right? But if there's enough angry people in the
and
building,
Diggs was
the
biggest non-quarterback dead cap hit in history.
Yeah,
and there's a $20 million gap.
Yeah, it's a lot of money. I would say no. To Paul's point, I know it was a little tongue in cheek about consolidating picks, but the trade from 34 that gets kicked around is 34, their fourth round pick, and then the extra sixth round pick that they got for Mac Jones would get you enough to move up into the 20s for one of these tackles, 80 Mitchell, something along those lines.
Love it. Three for one. Yeah. Love it.
And that, but now you are giving up three picks. Now, the sixth round pick to all of us, I think, is like,
right.
Do that on your own time.
Right.
But the fourth round pick's a value. That's basically a top 100 pick.
Sure.
And so that's a little bit more valuable. But if you feel really, really good about 80 Mitchell, Tyler Guyton, Amarius Mims, one of those players that's going to go there, then you do it.
Yeah. The Brown thing also, more importantly than the cap hit, because you guys know I'm not being disingenuous. I don't care about the cap hit. Anybody can be traded. He doesn't make that much money this year.
Mm.
He's a very affordable number this year. Next year is when they have their out. It's kind of like Daniel Jones with the Giants. Everybody's, Daniel Jones probably will have every opportunity to be the Giants quarterback again in 24 because the decision really to cut ties is next year. And I think it's the same with A.J. Brown. If you look at it, he put Tom Brady on his avatar, and people lost their minds.
Because he's his favorite player.
Right.
He has been since he
doesn't play here anymore.
And I'm not dismissing – listen, I'm not dismissing the whole – that's the other thing, is the Patriots are his favorite team.
Yes.
Probably,
not after last year.
Probably not anymore.
Well, in 2019 they were, and they still didn't draft him.
Right. And he was devastating.
Yeah.
He's gotten over it.
It's been a couple years where A.J. Brown's kind of had this back and forth with the Eagles and possible trade conversations and –
Well, the jumping off point was the extension for Smith.
Right.
And now he's already paid.
Yeah.
His contract is bigger than Smith's.
Right. Yeah. I just said Brandon Ayuk because we talked a lot about A.J. Brown. I think the biggest thing with Brandon Ayuk is that he's under team control for 2 more years. He has his fourth year and then he has his fifth year option the year after that. and is 26 and is one of the best receivers in the league. So I look at all those things and I see that's going to be a significant trade. Like, yeah, that's going to be a lot to get him out of San Francisco.
You're not just giving up like a pick.
Right. I think that that's probably 34 and then maybe your first round pick next year.
Next year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I mean, no question what the Patriots need and could slip into what they have right now, perfectly complement it, be that outside guy. And
you'll throw Juju in.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Sure. Shoot the pot.
Sure. And a bag of.
That's nice of you.
And a bag of balls. All right. Ryan and Milford, hey, thanks for calling in. What's going on?
How's it going?
Good, good.
I was wondering, as this episode finishes up, what you guys think the steal of the draft will be.
Good. Great question.
Where will it happen?
Yeah.
Thanks for calling, Ryan.
Yeah, thanks for calling, Ryan.
Steal the just like
this guy.
Was he stealing the draft in general,
just like,
or just
anybody?
For the Patriots?
How do you like? How do you know? Like, what if you said,
"Bub means
nice." Well okay. Done. Well
Troy,
done.
Troy Franklin is the yeah. guy I kind of like for Oregon. Yeah. Okay, yeah. I'm going to say he's going to be the steal of the draft, but he goes 20 to the first round. That ain't a steal.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know where the guy gets picked.
Well, it's also like your question, Paul, of who's going to be the biggest bust. And it's like there's a certain line of, like, you can't be a bust if you're drafted, like, second round on, right? Or, I mean, even, like, mid-first round on. Like, it's got to be a guy that's going to go in the top 15 that has some hype.
Yeah, you know, like Evan, J.J. McCarthy. Yeah.
I mean, I think
like you.
That's, yeah, right.
Great marketing team, J.J. McCarthy has, I'll tell you that.
He sure does. Well,
all of a sudden, going to go number one overall after not playing a game of football. It's
how many games has he lost? Three games?
And by the way, we're not publishing those. Those are just
well,
for fun.
We are now.
The busts are just stuff we talk about.
But I think if you believed
I just don't want people to say, they said that this was the – and then they took Jaden Daniels, and then they took it down. They got J.J. McCarthy and those chickens that they put it down. No, we're not publishing – who we think is the biggest bust in the draft.
No, it's, I mean, it's hard, but I mean, I think if you believed in one of those quarterbacks, like the second tier kind of guys, like if you really believe like in Michael Penix, like our friend Eldred does, you know, somebody like that, I could see that makes sense. It's like he's going to be the breakout. If you felt
that's
like you wanted to make
I
that
for
you
know? Ryan's question, Michael Penix. Michael Penix.
Penix.
Yeah.
Penix. Yeah, I agree.
It's a pretty good
if
one.
If he's like the fifth quarterback taken, he turns out to be the best, that's a steal.
Yeah.
So I would go with some of these day two receivers.
That's a good
I just think
too.
That some of these guys, you know, my guy's Roman Wilson. I think Roman Wilson, if he played for Washington or Texas in one of those offenses that threw the ball 600 times, his numbers would have been through the roof.
Absolutely.
The only reason why he didn't have the production was because of the type of offense that he was in at Michigan. Great film, great Senior Bowl. You know, just gets open all the time. I've compared him to Monroe St. Brown throughout this whole thing because he's just one of those guys that's just uncoverable in the slot at times. I think that there's a really good chance that Roman Wilson, Ricky Pearsall, Jalen McMillan, Jalen Polk, like one of those guys is going to be a 100-catch guy in the league, and he's going to go in the third round, and he's going to be Terry McLaurin. And we're going to be like, how did this happen? You know?
I don't know who it's going to be, but it's going to be a wide receiver.
I got to ask Evan this, though, like, so 27% here on this, and we know that it's kind of flawed, but like of this wide receiver group that you look at the first round guys that are going to go, I mean, do you really think that only 1 in 4 of these receivers
no,
is going
to
work
out?
No,
I would wonder. You know, so that was going all the way back to 2000.
And it's through 19.
Right. And I would wonder if we did it the last decade. And I understand that you can't do like last year's class already. You're not supposed to do that sort of thing. But I think that two things. One, the receivers have gotten better. Just point blank.
The last 5 years, it feels like the receivers have come in and made immediate impacts.
The talent has just gotten better. I think the 7-on-7 stuff, the spring football stuff, these guys are catching the ball, running routes year round, starting in like the 7th grade. I think the other thing is that we probably have gotten better at evaluating the position now that it's a more premium spot on the roster. Like, I just don't think that you're going to see like Roy Williams anymore or like
N'Keal Harry.
You know,
who's that?
N'Keal Harry, you know.
Sorry.
Kevin White, you know, like those types of guys. I think that these guys now are so much better than those guys were.
You know what I
in.
Think also, you know, it's like, you know, you talk about we've gotten better evaluating. I think they obviously their systems that they're in are, you know, that they're throwing the ball so much more in college than ever before. But think about how many guys are now doing the evaluating of that different kind of that young offensive mind, system-based offensive mind. They know what they're looking for a little bit more than the and I'm not this is not a shot at Bill, but the traditional old school defensive minded coaches that have been around for 30 years. You know, Bill didn't love wide receivers in general.
He thought Jonathan Baldwin was just as good as Julio Jones.
You know, he didn't.
We don't forget that.
But he didn't. Okay. He didn't. I don't think he respected the position.
Yeah, 100%.
He felt like it was one of the complimentary spots. Whereas I feel now if you polled the 32 head coaches, 28 of them would say wide receiver is a premium spot. Like, it used to be like quarterback, left tackle, edge guy, cover guy. I'm not sure that it's wide receiver has displaced certainly one or if not two of those spots.
Yeah. I think they call it on the Move the Sticks podcast the like triple P's or something like that. It's like passers, playmakers, and
pass rushers
maybe. Or like those are like the I should know this off the top of my head, but that's like the buzzwords.
Especially if you're gonna bring it up,
right. Those are like the buzz positions. I just know playmaker is one of them. That's why I brought it up. That the people around the league, not just us media people, but people around the league are now putting playmaker, whether that's a Travis Kelce or it's a Davante Adams. They're now putting that in the category of these other premium positions.
Yeah, like it's been 10 years, you know, at least since running backs were thought of that way.
Yeah.
You know, and the running backs went away. And now I think the wide receivers have replaced them.
Like, speaking of that, congratulations to Reggie Bush for getting his
Heisman deserved.
We're coming down the pike here, but let's just grab Patty and Agawam. Hey, Patty.
What is up, everyone?
Oh, not much. We're ready for this draft, man. That's what's up.
Yeah, I've been ready since about October. October 8th, the Saints game. So I got a question about a prospect that I think is sort of flying under the radar. Roger Rosengarten.
Yeah, Evan loves
offensive tackle. He was Michael Penix's blindside tackle. Granted, he played on the right side. But you look at the guy, you look at his numbers, 32 total pressures over the last 2 years with zero sacks. And like Evan said, both years, over 600 pass attempts. How come he's not generating as much buzz? And if we were to pick him, do you think we could flip him to LT? And that's all I got, guys.
Thanks, Patty.
Yeah, not to pick on Patty, I think Roger Rosengarten's getting a lot of buzz.
Yeah.
I think that he's somebody that the league is very, very high on.
Is that a first rounder?
I don't think he's going to go that high.
But he's one of the guys that actually has some promise that's in the second tier.
I judge it on the Paul test. Yeah, if it's a tackle that I know about, he's getting buzz.
Yeah, he's
right, there you go.
Let me put you this way. He's going in the top 64, right? Like, I'd be pretty shocked if he's there by round three. Very explosive mover. So, like, zone teams are going to love him. Like, you know, because he can get lateral and he can move his feet in very, very good range at the position. His biggest concern is just general size and play strength. He's not a very long, big tackle. And, you know, that's works against him because he's very aggressive to make up for that. And these well-schooled rushers, oh, you're going to come jump out at me? Swim move by. You know, like those types of things happen a lot to him on film against the better teams, like Michigan ate his lunch in the national championship game. But you watch the rest of his film and the other 11 games, he's like outstanding. But that one game, he was really rough.
Roger.
So
it's kind of a tough name.
And if that's kind of the, you know, his size, and that might not necessarily be conducive to making the switch to the left side. I know, you know, nothing about how hard it is, other than what the coaches have always said, that it's not an easy transition.
Yeah, I think
he sounds like he's built like a right tackle.
Yeah, I think the one thing for him is just going to be, let's get him into an NFL strength and conditioning program and see if we can improve his anchor so that he doesn't have to be so aggressive. You know, guys that are big, like Patrick Paul, you know, he just sits back in his chair and waits for you to come to him. And you're not going to go through me because I'm 340 pounds. So you're going to have to go around me. I'm going to sit back like this. Roger Rosengarten is like 305, 300. Yeah. So he has to be aggressive and go get guys. And that's where, you know, those smart guys will get into him.
All right, guys, we're coming down. We got 2 minutes left here. I mean, this is capping off months of draft coverage, it feels like, as Patty said, going back to October. But have we missed anything here? I mean, we've done so many shows, Patriots Unfiltered, Patriots Draft Countdown, interviews, prospect breakdown. I mean, we've done it. What have we missed something? That's the last question I have for y'all.
Mikey, this is your opportunity to talk about Holy Cross.
We were just talking about
the guard. I know, Jalen Coker.
I almost sent you a text with the screenshot of the Holy Cross all 22.
I've had some former coaches from Holy Cross expressing dissatisfaction that they haven't gotten an Evan Lazar film breakdown.
I'll put a clip up.
Put a clip up there.
You're still in touch with the James Madison staff?
Yeah. Oh, they love the show. They're big Perillo fans.
That's awesome.
I
know. You introduced me to those
Drew
are great guys.
Yeah, you met them last. Yeah, they're great guys. And, no, they still love all the shows. So, But I feel like we've kind of done a good job, though, summing everything up, right? I mean, I feel like we've covered it, and now it's just rubber meets the road tomorrow night.
Are we going to ask everybody what you think the pick is?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Drake
May.
I'm not going to lie. I feel like something crazy is going to happen. We're going to trade out, yeah. But I'm going to say May.
May.
So I do this every single year because I'm a nerd. Like, I'm just, it's so bad.
No.
But every single year, I watch my favorite player in the draft, his best tape again. I haven't watched it, Drake May tape since like January.
You're not letting yourself do it?
Right.
You don't want to get attached?
No. So I did it last night with both him and Jaden. And I watched Drake May against Syracuse, where he just absolutely tore them apart. And I watched Jaden Daniels against Florida, which was a video game.
That like, was the 600-yard
yeah,
game.
Yeah, which is absolutely stupid. And I do it every single year because I want to remind myself of, like, we nitpick these guys. And we rake these guys through the coals for 6 months. Those guys are pretty darn good. Like, they're pretty darn good prospects, and they can't go wrong with either guy. So if Washington takes Jaden, I'm taking Drake. If they take Drake, I'm taking Jaden. I'm not trading the pick.
That's how I am.
I'm not doing anything stupid. I'm not doing anything crazy. I think that's
I'm with you.
That's what you got to do.
All right. Well, there you have it, folks. That's going to be a wrap on Patriots Draft Countdown presented by Bud Light here for 2024. So I want to thank you guys for tuning in to everything. And, of course, we'll be live with you throughout the draft here for Patriots Unfiltered. We'll be live on video starting at 7:30 on Thursday night, 6:30 on Friday night, and then we'll be on 1 to 3 on Saturday for those last couple rounds. So plenty of coverage coming your way. It's the draft, folks. Buckle up.
Thank you for downloading this podcast. Subscribe on Apple, Google Play, and everywhere else you listen. Like the show? Please rate and review us. Listener comments and ratings help keep us high in the podcast rankings so new listeners can find us. Be sure to check patriots.com for more news and more podcasts.